This hour of the Jason Rant Show brought to you by MMComfortSystems.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
There's a new two-story home put up in Ballard without a permit, and nothing is being done about it. It's not being handled. It's not being fined. The city isn't getting all that involved because it's actually a homeless person's RV that was turned into a double-decker with a makeshift second story. And it is remarkable that this is allowed to happen without any pushback from the city whatsoever.
It's insane.
Yes, it is. That's Alex Hardy. He lives in that area. He works across the street from this double-decker RV. And he understands that, hey, you put a shack on your own property, you better get that permit. Oh my gosh, you better, because we got to tax it. We got to give you a whole bunch of different fees you got to pay. Here's a lot of paperwork. Come on down to the office. But when you're homeless, the laws don't apply.
We've just come to accept it. Pretty much the homeless have just taken over both sides of the street.
Of course, because you live in Seattle. Those of us who are self-loathing, I guess, we put ourselves through this all the time. Alex spoke to Como TV.
We feel like they have more rights than us. I mean, to go up in our house, we would have to have several permits.
He's 100% correct, and he's more correct than he realizes. Because not only would he get killed with these permits, but absolutely, 100%. The homeless don't have to follow rules, and they get more rights than you do. The left likes to talk about equal justice under the law while practicing unequal justice under the law. But they justify it because, well, I mean, these people are living out on the streets. And so, you know, you've got privilege. You live in a home. You've got a job. So obviously we're going to spend time on you and not the people who are making lives miserable in the community of people who are paying our taxes, who are following all the rules. Why would we ever do that? So Alex reported this nuisance via the Find It, Fix It app, which is run by the city. You report an issue. You can put in photos, a description, you tell them exactly where the issue is, and they're supposed to handle it. However, he hasn't yet gotten a response.
And it's growing daily. I don't know if they're going to do a triple decker. We're worried it's going to maybe fall down.
It might fall down. Something tells me that the homeless person who's in charge here maybe doesn't have the proper background to build these kinds of things. He has an RV, but he can't, I guess, just live in the RV. Now, SDOT is responsible for removing or ticketing RVs. But according to their spokesperson, Como TV, quote, to my knowledge, I have never seen anything like this. Oh, okay. And it is an RV. It's not a motorcycle that identifies as an RV. It's an actual RV. And it's got a makeshift shack on top of it. It's a double-decker RV. So it doesn't matter whether or not you've heard of this before, you've seen this before, you could still tow it. And because Seattle City Councilmember Dan Strauss, who represents Ballard, thinks you're all stupid, he's blaming Mayor Jenny Durkin. He hopes you're all gullible enough to believe that this is Jenny Durkin's doing. He gave a statement, I'm working with service providers directly because the mayor's office has not been responsive to addressing homelessness in District 6. That is a bald-faced lie. That is an abject lie. Everything in that statement, which is only a sentence long, is a lie. He's not working with anyone, and the mayor's office has been responsive to addressing homelessness in the district. You will not let them do any sweeps. And he thinks you will fall for this because you're all naive and gullible. That's what he thinks. And you know what? Given his position in the council right now, he was elected. Maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. Elise owns the downtown dog lounge, which is just a few blocks away. And obviously, she's getting frustrated.
I want the city to go to them and tell them that they have to take it down. Honestly, is it going to take that thing falling over? And then
yes,
we do something?
And actually, even if that happens, something might not get done, to be clear. Even if that were to happen, something might not get done. Because the city doesn't want to act. And when I say the city, I mean the council. It's the council that cut the navigation team. It's the council that is driving the RV on homelessness. And their RV is stuck on the corner of the road on Aurora. And it's surrounded by trash. You like how I really committed to that metaphor?
Yeah, that was nice.
I leaned in.
You really did.
Yeah. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
A FDA advisory panel today said, okay, you can get the booster shot if you are over the age of 65 and maybe you have high exposure risk or severe exposure risk to COVID. But no. Vaccines for people over the age of 16, these boosters, no. That was defeated in a vote of 2-16, despite the fact that starting on Monday, the Biden administration wanted people to get boosters. The Biden administration, the ones who said over and over and over again, we listen to the science. That's exactly what Joe Biden said. We're focused on the science. We're going to listen to the scientists, not like those anti-science Trumpers. But before the actual experts, the doctors, weighed in on boosters, they said, oh, no, we're all in. You're going to have to all get booster shots starting on Monday. But obviously, this puts things on hold. Now, there is going to be clear, a second vote, a larger vote. And something tells me it's not going to go the way that this advisory panel voted. Because I believe they're going to get a whole bunch of pressure, political pressure coming from the Biden administration. That very administration that said they would never do something like that. They're not going to act politically. They're only going to go by the science. But the fact of the matter is they decided to push this before they had any clearance to do so, which meant they either thought the FDA was going to do exactly what they wanted or they really didn't care. Here's the Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy.
You know, if you want to roll out booster shots to the population, you can't flip a switch and make that happen overnight. There's important planning that has to take place with localities, with state governments, with community organizations. And so we laid out an initial plan for that purpose to allow the time that we've now been using over the last few weeks to do that all important coordination so the public could be confident that if and when boosters were required, they would be there for them.
You couldn't set the date until after a vote? You had to do it the day, like, after the negative, you couldn't just wait until you got an actual vote that went in your favor. You couldn't have just said, hey, guys, we're going to set up in the background some of what we need to, but, you know, we're hoping to get vaccine approval for a booster shot. You couldn't wait a little bit because now what it sounds like is that it was all political. Whether or not it was, it sounds like all of this is political because of the incompetence coming from this administration. And as Chris Wallace pointed out on Fox News, it's just embarrassing. And he made these comments before the vote took place.
This is an embarrassment for a president who campaigned against Donald Trump in 2020 and has ruled as the president of the United States, presided for the last few months, saying we are going to listen to the scientists and we are going to not get ahead of the science. And as we all know, and the tape is there indelibly, on August 18th, he came and basically announced a booster program and even announced a date, which is next Monday, September 20th, for people who received the vaccine the earliest, like in January of this year. And as we all know, the FDA advisory panel is going to meet today, late this afternoon, and decide what they think. The FDA then has to decide whether they want to take their advice or not. The CDC is not meeting until sometime next week. So we haven't heard, I don't think, definitively from the White House, but I can't imagine that they're going to be rolling out boosters before the two main health regulators, the CDC and the FDA, approve it.
And yet they set it up for Monday. It is remarkable. It is absolutely remarkable what's going on here. We're going to wait for the scientists to weigh in. Okay. Unless you thought you already knew what they were going to do. Now, ultimately, again, the FDA, as he just said, it's going to go to an FDA vote from this advisory committee. The FDA might just say, oh, no, we're all in. We want the go for it. Even though in this advisory panel of experts, they pointed out that for 16 to 17 year olds in particular, there is not enough data to suggest that a booster would make sense, especially when you compare it to the increased risk for myocarditis, the inflammation of the heart that we already know is a risk factor primarily for young boys, 16, 17, 18 years old. It is remarkable what's going on here. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. I'll be on Fox News primetime today on a panel with my friend Rachel Campos Duffy. And the guest host is Lawrence Jones, also my friend. So we're just all buddies.
Oh,
yay, whole bunch of friends.
You don't have friends, Jason.
They're my friends.
You don't have friends.
I talk with them. That counts.
They're not your friends.
What are they using me for? I mean, you can argue I'm using them for stuff, but what would they argue for me? Nothing. Okay. What do I have?
That's
hair care tips, which actually.
Do you share them with them?
If they ask. We do. Lawrence Jones and I sometimes send each other texts of shoes.
Lawrence has the best hair on Fox News.
Shut your stupid face. You shut it down. You shut it.
You don't
turn
agree
off
with
that microphone.
You don't.
You turn it off. Turn it off or I'm going to do it for you. Yeah, I can't talk anymore. How about that? If you missed last night's Tucker Carlson Tonight hit, all of them are available right now at youtube.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies. And a big release this weekend is called Cop Shop. It is a 70s-inspired, very stylish, slow-burn crime thriller starring Gerard Butler. It finds a police station at the center of a pretty strange situation where Teddy, played by Frank Grillo, assaults an officer because he wants to get put into a jail cell. Turns out he's not the only one who wanted to get put into that jail.
What are you in for?
What are you in for?
I sucker punched a cop.
Oh, that's not what you're in for. You're in for a lot more than that.
What'd you do?
Did what I had to do. To get in here. To get to you, Teddy.
So soon, the station comes under siege and all hell pretty much breaks loose.
This is Officer Valerie Young.
I am gravely wounded in the subfloor detention block at the Gun Creek City Police Headquarters. Copy. Can anyone hear me? 1013. Officer in dire medical need. Over.
Didn't go so well, is it? Giving any more details, I think, on Cop Shop would reveal way too much. This is a film that relies on some really smart and really well done twists and turns. And it's one of the reasons I think the movie works so well. It is well paced, beautifully edited and directed. The action sequences are brutal and tense. And let's be clear, the acting is phenomenal. You get incredibly strong performances by the two leads, but really the supporting roles, Alexis Lauder and Toby Huss, they steal this film. It works so effectively. And where others in this genre can sometimes flounder, I think, but in this film it doesn't, is the mood. It's uncomfortable. You feel on edge the entire time. There's this sense of impending doom. And by the way, you're usually right to feel that way in this film. And yet at the same time, it also manages to be really, really fun. It's got elements of a sort of an elevated B movie. It's got influences of Quentin Tarantino. You get that from the first shot to the end scene. It's got a lot of dark humor. But it's also viciously violent at times. And above all, nothing feels wasted in this movie. Every single minute ends up pushing us towards this rather spectacular ending that I actually didn't think it was very easy to predict. Cop Shop, I loved. It's pretty outstanding. I highly recommend it. But no, going in, this is a hard R rating. So probably not good for some younger kids, but use your judgment. A lot of it is mostly violence, but there is some really strong language here. Cop Shop is out now. Hope you'll see it. What movie are you going to see this weekend? Are you going to take me up on my offer? Or are you just going to go into ignore me and go see something else? 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message and let me know. 1-800-465-8770. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Amazonia?
AEG says they're starting to bring Amazon palm reading technology called Amazon One to their concert venues. And I'm not entirely sure I understand how this will ultimately work outside of general admissions concert halls or venues. Earlier this week, they started using it at the Red Rocks in, where is that, Denver? It's in Colorado.
Sure, I have no clue. I've just seen pictures of it. I'll go with Colorado.
See, I think it's in Colorado. You basically sign up to connect your palm to a ticketing account that you then use to gain entry into a venue. Now, I have used this technology at a Whole Foods, or no, maybe the Amazon Go or Amazon store, the Amazon store in Seattle. You hold your hand, your palm, over this device, and it scans it, and then it just automatically deducts whatever it is what you owe.
Because you carry currency in your skin, correct?
Well, it's connected to your credit card.
Your credit card is in your skin.
No. The image of your phone is connected in the clouds to a credit card reader of some kind and a satellite.
How does my palm come into play?
It has a distinct look.
I have to tattoo my credit card to my palm?
It's not permanent. It's not permanent.
Oh, okay. It's semi-permanent.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like a henna?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Sounds cool.
In all seriousness, it's literally you put your hand over it. It recognizes your hand. It's kind of like your iPhone when you turn it on and it looks at your face to know it's you. Well, it's the same thing except the palm print is connected to your Amazon account. In this case, you don't have to have an Amazon account. You just have to have an account with AEG. And the AP says, this is the part that just is nonsensical to me. There's no truth to this.
This is the part? Okay, this part. I'm ready.
Concert goers can get to their seats faster with their palm than holding up their phone to an attendant to scan a barcode, according to Brian Perez, CEO of AXS, which owns AEG. Those who want to scan their palms will have a separate lane to enter. You don't have to fumble around with your phone, said Perez. Your hand is always attached to your body. So, pushing aside all of the privacy concerns, and there are a few, and I kind of don't buy them. People help, like, host their credit card information on Amazon.com or one of many websites that you shop on. It's the exact same kind of protection than your palm image would be. So I don't think that is a valid excuse here or concern here. But first of all, because I've used the technology, you have to line up your palm perfectly over the center. And it gives you a little bit of an image readout if you're slightly off center and you move your hand a little bit more to cover the entirety of the camera. So even if you're really, really good at it, it'll take you about 5 seconds. If you're not good at it, because maybe you pre-partied before going to the concert, it's going to take you way more than 5 seconds. There's no way it's that much more difficult to scan a barcode on a phone. I get that some people are stupid and they wait until the very last minute as if they didn't realize they had to pull out their phone for the ticket. Oh, yeah, the ticket's on you've been standing in line this entire time. What'd you think, you dummy?
Well, and then
I get that part, but that's about it.
But then you get up there and the usher's like, can you turn your brightness up all the way? So then you got to turn your brightness
you
up all the way.
You don't need to. That's just a lie.
And then they got the shaky hand and they can't get it. And then some
people, if you have a shaky hand while you're putting your palm over the camera?
Yeah, if it's that sensitive, then there's a problem. I want it to just be able to like swipe my hand over it and it got it immediately, half second, and I would be all over this.
How do you know that someone didn't like sneak in?
Just like hover their palm that wasn't connected to anything.
In.
There's got to be an usher there.
There's got to be an usher there, and it's going to, I'm presuming, go bing, like you can go
through. Yeah, it makes a nice little loud beep
sound.
What if
he just runs past the 90-year-old who they put out there with the little jumpsuit?
They could still do that even if they're scanning regular tickets.
Well, here's the real issue here that I have, because I'm not opposed to this. I just think that they're overselling it a little bit. This can only be used in general admission concert venues.
Why?
How does it know what seat you're at?
Well, what do you mean?
How would it know?
You're saying like if you're going to
Let's say I bought front row tickets to a concert of some kind, whoever the hip new artist is, Madonna. And I hover my thing or my hand over it, and it says on the little screen at the entrance to the venue, yes, Jason has tickets 1A and 2B or whatever it is. When you get to the actual seats, why would I not just go anywhere I wanted to?
I mean, you probably...
There's no way to check. There's no,
probably
sir,
have.
Are these your tickets? You don't look like you belong here.
There's got to be ticketed proof like that you carry on your phone, right?
Well, then what's the point of the palm?
Just the scanny portion of it, right?
Okay, so now we're not going to talk about how you're fumbling to get your phone out while trying to prove where you're seated? Is it so you weren't just adding extra technology
this
for no
reason?
This
is why it should be a tattoo. Because then you could just show it.
Well, that would be fine if you only went to like one concert every, you know, few years.
Yeah, or you just got to get it covered up every time.
Well, no, it's the same issue with the seat stuff. You're saying show the tattoo?
Yeah.
While you're seated.
You show the tattoo. Say,
well,
look, this is my
seat. First
of
all, you can't do that. Because what if people are already like super tatted? And they don't have space.
Do it in different color.
And then you're
going
to have to do
ink.
It like on their big toe.
No.
You're going to have to take their shoes off all the time. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate your time. You can send me a text at any point. Weigh in on anything we talk about at 1-800-465-8770. I'm assuming that we're at the point where progressives have stopped talking about the importance of the eviction moratorium. They pretended to care deeply about that. That was always about hurting the business owners who are landlords. This was always about trying to get free housing. It didn't quite work, even after defying the constitutional, defying the Supreme Court saying what you did was unconstitutional. Biden tried to do it again. They slapped him down anyway. Didn't say like, oh, well, we didn't think you were going to question us, so well, you win. Kudos to you. Not everyone calls us out and does whatever they want. No, it's being enforced. And I say that they must have given up on this because they seem to be okay, based upon their silence, on these stories that are starting to pop up about evictions tied specifically to your vaccination status. There's a mother of two in South Florida. Her name is Jasmine Irby. She was on Fox and Friends this morning. And she said that she was shocked when she got this notice from the landlord saying, hey, you better get vaccinated in 2 weeks or within 2 weeks, or we're going to evict.
It was either because I didn't have proof of vaccination by the 2 weeks. They still wasn't even allowing me to sign off on my lease. There was like no loophole, no working with me, no extensions. And I literally had to walk away, meaning that if I were to stay, then it would have been harder for me to find, you know, the next place for me and my kids to live, because now I will have an eviction, you know, under my name. And that's definitely not worth, you know, risking it.
She's 100% correct. Kudos to her for that, for pushing back, for saying, no, 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 that's not cool. Now, according to Fox News, they say the landlord is requiring the tenants, anyone over the age of 18, if you want to renew your lease, you have to show some proof that you got fully vaccinated. The landlord is Santiago Alvarez. He manages 1,200 units, and he says he's going to keep the mandate in place despite it being apparently illegal in the state of Washington, thanks to the changes made by Governor Ron DeSantis. He's saying, no, you don't get to do this. He's saying, yeah, I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to evict a woman of color, a mother, the very person that folks like AOC and Cori Bush pretended to care about but are now saying nothing, because she doesn't want to get vaccinated, or doesn't really, any of these people don't want to give me their information. And Irby says some of her neighbors didn't even know about this policy.
There's also other neighbors that aren't vaccinated as well. And basically, if I didn't tell them what I was going through, they had no clue on what was going on, because they didn't get this notice. They didn't get, you know, hey, this is what we're doing from here on out. They didn't get any of that.
This is pretty awful. This is pretty awful. But again, we're going down this road of putting vaccinated versus unvaccinated. We want people to fight. We want people to bully people who choose not to get vaccinated. That's what they're doing. They are choosing to do this. This is happening on the left. This isn't happening on the right. The president who said he was going to unite us, we're going to be united, already forgot, I guess, that was his promise, his goal. How is this going to end? You think this is going to end? Well, it's just going to create more strife, more disagreement, more fights. We're seeing more and more videos popping up now of people getting into it out in New York, for example, over the vaccine passports. It's going to happen here in King County, and eventually it's going to happen across the state, where it's going to be implemented statewide. It's going to hit you whether you live in Ferndale or Longview. If you're in Spokane or Bainbridge Island, you are going to get hit by this. And it's going to create a lot of anger, a lot of conflict, something that stand-up comic Jim Brewer says, I don't want any part of. He made the announcement earlier this week that he was canceling the shows at any of the venues that wanted to mandate the vaccines. And he explained on Tucker Carlson why that was.
My fans were really upset. They said, you know, I'm not comfortable with getting a COVID shot. And now they're saying I can't come see you perform unless I do that. And I looked into it. And that's the last thing you should be doing is going, hey, you want to come? You want to come see the, you're like feeding the seal, the fish. Hey, you want to you want to come see a concert?
Don't make the noise.
You want to here, catch the fit. Why would you do that? Why would you? I don't want any of my fans forced to come laugh, and they got to get a shot in them.
I think that that is a reasonable position. You are an adult. The vaccine either protects you or it doesn't. Do you believe in the vaccine? Cool. Then why do you care if you're around someone who's unvaccinated? If you believe that the vaccine protects you. Now, let's say, well, there are breakthrough cases. Yes, there's that's true. Then wear a mask if that is of that much concern to you. Wear a mask. You can choose to wear a mask and be vaccinated. Hey, guess what? You can wear three masks. You can do whatever it is you want. But they want to have control over you. And for people like Jim Brewer, it doesn't make sense at all.
What really started my video was there's a new narrative. And the new narrative is the unvaccinated are the beast. Kill the beast. This program goes on forever. Kill the beast. The beast is the unvaccinated. Kill them. And when our leader put that out there and pointed the finger, like, we're the demons? I'm not vaccinated. I had COVID. You're not going to tell me about my body. I know my body. I know my morals. I know my faith. You don't come telling me and threaten me and everyone else as if we're the demons.
He's right. We're calling out a group of people, most of which are already protected because of natural immunity, per the science and data that the Biden administration and other Democrats told us to pay attention to, except when it conflicts with one of their talking points. If you had COVID, you have some form of natural immunity according to the data. Could that change? Yes, it could. I'm certainly open to understanding that things change, and so too should our reactions. But nothing's changed here that's been presented. The latest data we have is literally that if you got over COVID, you have a better chance of fighting off Delta, 27 times higher than that of a vaccine. So it's almost like you already had your booster shot. And then some. So why are we pretending that that data doesn't exist? They just think it's easier as a message to just say everyone should get vaccinated. They think you're too stupid to figure out anything else. Like, it's such a hard putt to understand. If you had COVID, you don't have to get vaccinated. I'm so confused. Who should get vaccinated? I don't understand. How about this? If you want to get vaccinated, go get vaccinated. How about that? Is that, oh, you don't like it when people make decisions you don't like? 1-800-465-8770. Send me your text messages. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show on Friday. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget, if you miss any of my Fox News appearances, I was on Tucker Carlson last night, or I should say Tucker Carlson Tonight last night, just to confuse people. I'm on Fox News Primetime today, so if you miss any of that, you can go ahead and check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/JasonRants, youtube.com/JasonRants. The story is an update to one that we had covered in the past, and I covered it in with great interest, because this whole idea of helmets being racist is, of course, ludicrous. And yet we're being told that helmet laws, I should say, are racist because they disproportionately impact people of color, which, by the way, is not even true. However, I just want to open with a March 5th email that we got of this year from Gene Colwells, who is a King County Council member, because at the time when I wrote about this and talked about it on the radio, I said that they were getting ready to repeal the helmet laws because they're racist. And she wrote to you, Peyton, I was able to read and listen to your report. Rant. Seattle activists claim bicycle helmet laws are racist. Council may repeal. However, there is no intent at this point by the Board of Health or myself to repeal this law, which seems to be the thrust of Mr. Rance's argument. In fact, it was. That was the thrust. I mean, I put it literally in the headline.
It's good to know, comforting to know that she can read and translate what you mean.
Here's the crosscut.com headline from today. King County moves toward repealing bicycle helmet law. Well, that's interesting because that's what I said the last time, that all indication was that they were moving towards that specific thing. But she told us rather, like, we kind of got slapped down by her because we put in a request to talk with her because I wanted to tell her why she's wrong on this. And of course, she won't actually come on the show because God forbid she speak to someone who maybe disagrees with her in a respectful way. And I would be respectful. I'm only disrespectful when you're not in front of me. But Crosscut says several board members were explicit during a meeting Thursday in their desire to strike the law from the books, and none raised any clear opposition. At the core of their reasoning was the law's disproportionate use against people of color and those experiencing homelessness, as well as questions about whether it was achieving its stated goal. Well, it's kind of hard to say it's not achieving its stated goal unless you had a whole bunch of data points to show people weren't wearing their helmets, they were getting into accidents and either getting severely injured or dying. So I don't know that last point. But very clearly, we knew from the beginning that whenever you make any kind of disproportionality argument, not only is it lazy, it's almost always wrong because it ignores why. They just tell you the what. They don't tell you the why. And to be fair to Jean Cowell's King County Council member, in this Crosscut piece, she said, well, it's a little bit more complicated than people assume. She's not fully on board just completely repealing, but she said something along the lines of, but we got to do something. I don't know what that means if you have a helmet law that says you have to wear your helmet. What is it? You only have to wear a half of a helmet. There's only so much that you can actually do to address this other than maybe say it's still the law, but we're not going to give you a ticket. That's probably – so then it's nothing. So, okay, big deal. You can't do this, but there's no punishment. Well, then why? What's the teeth to it? There is none. They're looking to repeal this not over safety issues. No one is arguing that wearing a helmet is safe. No one is arguing that a helmet can save you from serious head injury if you were to fall down while riding a bike and hitting your head. They're saying that the law itself is racist because not enough white people were getting ticketed. But when you actually look at the data from which they base their conclusion, we know that that is nonsense. I actually, because I am a nerd, I looked at the study that they took on, and it was not peer-reviewed. It looked at only about 1,600 tickets that were given over a 13-year time span, which amounted to 130 or so tickets per year. That's what they were looking at to judge whether or not this law has a disproportionate impact on people of color. And they say black bicyclists made up 4.7% of riders, but amassed 17.3% of the tickets over 13 years. That's only about 288 tickets when you do the math. Okay? So we're not talking about a huge number here to begin with. Number two, they say Native American bicyclists were given tickets at two times the rate of white riders relative to their share of the bicycling population. What do you think that represents, that number? 20 tickets over 13 years. Okay?
That's it.
20 tickets over the course of 13 years.
A little over one ticket per year.
It's not a significant number. But then they say something that they weren't expecting to see. I always expect it because it's almost always the case. Asians always outperform whites when it comes to these studies. When we're looking at grades.
Thank you.
When we're looking at income.
Thank you.
Asians tend to do better than whites. Okay?
Yes.
Whites tend to do better than blacks and Latinos. That's true. And Native Americans. Latinos tend to do better than Native Americans. But we only focus on when whites do better. You don't focus on any of the other stuff. Never, ever, ever. It's always just white people. But Asian riders showed that they were 11 times less likely than whites to get tickets. And it's not even, that's how they frame it, that they're less likely to get tickets. They were 11 times under-ticketed as it relates to white people. And I say it in that way because, number one, whites aren't given special treatment here. Number two, is it possible that over the course of the 13 years that they looked at it, that Asian people had a tendency more so than everybody else to wear helmets? As a culture, what do we know about Asians?
They're polite. They follow rules.
Follow rules! Yeah. And I know everyone's like, oh my God, did he just say a group of people have a tendency to do something. Oh, no, I hope I didn't offend by saying a group of people are nice and actually follow laws. Oh, no.
First-hand experience,
but
baby.
What else is at play? Are helmets expensive? Yeah. They can be expensive. Who has the most money of those demographics? Asians and whites. Is it possible that they were able to afford a helmet?
Perhaps, yeah.
And maybe replace one that got broken or stolen more often than maybe someone else? Maybe. We're talking about how a lot of these people are also homeless. Okay. Demographically, who tends to be homeless? It's between white and black. So less Asians. So Asians are not going to cut down into that number. They're going to be overrepresented elsewhere. There's all these other reasons behind some of the data. And yet, what was staggering to me was the word staggering being used by this researcher who's an activist who said, based on the data that showed white people were more likely to get ticketed than Asians, they say, it was staggering for me to see that Asian cyclists get cited for not wearing helmets at a rate 11 times lower than expected for their share of bike trips. As expected. It doesn't mean anything. What that tells me is that the police are being totally discretionary in whom they stop. Police are able to use this law to target certain communities that, for whatever reasons, they already want to stop. How that dude jumps to that conclusion, based on the data, is beyond me, other than he has a bias. His argument is that every group should be seen as equal in the data as to who gets ticketed relative to their percentage of bicyclists. Why? Why is that an assumption? Why is that an assumption? Why would we not assume that there's going to be some disparities? And sometimes whites will overperform and Asians under, although rarely.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sucking up. Sometimes blacks will overperform than Latinos, who will overperform than whites, who will overperform than Native Americans. And sometimes all of that kind of moves around. There's never going to be this quote unquote equity in the data. It's never going to exist because there are all these other issues that are underlying all the different behaviors. Is it possible that the cops who were giving out these tickets were racist? Yeah, okay, that's possible. What's more likely, though, that every single cop who gave out a ticket, all of them happened to be virulent racist, but only against black and Latino or black and Native Americans, not against Asians? Or maybe something else is at play that's not as nefarious. What's most likely?
Yeah, the second one.
Probably. How many of the people who got ticketed more than once in the data? I don't know, because it doesn't say. Were they doing anything else at the time that they were getting ticketed that might have brought the cops' attention to them? I don't know. Doesn't say. It doesn't even attempt. This is an activist analyst, who decided to come up with an interpretation for the data before he actually saw the data.
I can't believe you actually went through and read the data. I
read it all.
They did not expect anyone to go through and read that data.
No, they didn't.
And you did.
I 100% did. And I remember we invited the guy on to defend the points. And he said no. I remember him saying no because he didn't think I was going to be open-minded. How ironic. The guy who's inviting you to come on to the show to defend your position and actually have a conversation about it. And by the way, we shouldn't lose in all of this. If you have a law that has a disproportionate impact, it doesn't mean that just because there's maybe nothing nefarious going on, that it can't be addressed in some way, and maybe you can address it. But the way to not address it is to literally not address it by just getting rid of the law. You would just get rid of the law. Now, ultimately, does this impact me at all? No. I don't ride a bike, and I don't drive a car. I think it impacts people who drive because no one wants to hit a... Well, let's say no one wants to hit a bicyclist. But the truth is, even though you do, you don't really want to. And you don't want to have to live with hitting a bicyclist by accident and having them get severely injured because they weren't wearing a helmet. And the bicyclists obviously don't want to get severely injured for not wearing a helmet. So why not be honest about what the data actually says and then get together and say, okay, now let's come based on this. Now we're informed by the reality of what the data says and why it says it. Let's talk about solutions. Maybe there aren't any. And that's okay too. Sometimes you're not going to get a solution because maybe it's not that big of a problem. And when you're coming at me and you're saying, oh, well, we've got 288 tickets were given to black bicyclists and only 70 were given to white. That's not a big deal. Sorry. I know you want to pretend otherwise. It's not a big deal. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text. It's the Jason Rand Show.